Hi, this is Alex Drummond, Managing Editor for Metro Magazine, and welcome to Metrospectives, a podcast about public transportation, the private motor coach industry, and all things mobility. My guests today are Administrator Jason Fairbrush and his Assistant Director of Operations, Jesse Rush, from Oklahoma City's Embark. Fairbrush and Rush join me to discuss the many initiatives going on at the agency, including an 8-mile, 32-stop BRT line that is currently in the works. They also discuss the impact of the pandemic and how the Embark team has responded during this time of crisis. Now, here's my talk with Jason and Jesse. Well, thanks for joining me today, guys. Jason, Jesse, how are you guys doing today?
Doing good.
Doing well, thank you.
Great. How's everything in Oklahoma City? I got to ask you guys, being from California, everyone in San Francisco hates the term Frisco. How does Oklahoma Cityans, feel about OKC?
Yeah, speaking for the folks that I know, I don't think we have a big issue with it.
Okay, great. Because I might refer to OKC. Yeah. Great. Yeah. I might refer to OKC occasionally. I just want to make sure. Thanks for joining us. If you wanted to give a little bit of background on Embark and some of the challenges the agency typically faces, outside of the pandemic and what you guys have done to kind of address those challenges.
Sure. I'll take that one. A little bit of background on Embark. Embark is actually, our business name, if you will. It's our brand throughout the community. We are actually a public trust, the Central Oklahoma Transportation and Parking Authority. And as a trust, our sole beneficiary is the city. So that's a little bit of the technical background. We've been around since 1966, and through the trust, the city has provided public transportation and parking services, since that time. There's some advantages to being, that closely tied to the city, especially when you think about opportunities to coordinate with the Public Works Department and the Planning Department and, as a transit agency, really have a seat at the table with all the priorities, if you will, of the city. So I think that's really played to our advantage as a transit provider, being at least for our community, being tied that closely to the city. So that's a little bit of a background. I'll tell you, we really feel like we're part of, certainly some forward thinking and forward momentum for transit in Oklahoma City right now. Really a lot of that goes back to, some studies we did back in 2005 that we've been able to implement, some new modes we've been able to bring online, some additional service hours. And so I think we're, as far as background, we've been doing public transit and parking for a really long time, but I would say really within the last 5 to 7 years, public transportation in Oklahoma City has transformed from what it was, the previous decade and before. And we're just fortunate, to be able to be part of that and be able to work closely and address some of the needs of our community there. So, but as far as challenges go, I think part of your question was challenges, being right here, kind of in the middle of the U.S. and, being a big city in terms of landmass, 620 square miles. I mean, the reality is most people still use the automobile to get around. Right. And so as a public transit provider, as all public transit providers compete, with single occupancy vehicles and such, I think we have some really stiff competition here in Oklahoma City for that. But, hopefully we'll get into some other questions, some things we're doing to kind of change that game a little bit and enhance our service offerings. So,
Yeah. I think, just to start, I know we're going to get into some of the planning and some of the things that have been going on at the agency, but as far as, marketing and getting people to get out of their vehicles, You know, have you guys had success at that? And you know, can you talk a little bit about, I guess, maybe ridership pre-COVID and some of the gains and some of the things that were happening before?
Yeah, sure. You know, one of the things I credit to, you know, you mentioned the word marketing. And so one of the things I would credit to, you know, our staff and our trustees is that really that marketing vision, you know, marketing public transportation and the advantages to our community. And I think we have successfully done that really through our rebranding, right? And we did that back in 2014. So it's been a little while. But that was really part of, in my mind, what really changed the dynamic. One of the things that changed the dynamic for public transit in Oklahoma City, because we were able to, you know, basically rebrand ourselves, reinvent ourselves, and do that at a time when we could elevate our service level through like enhanced frequency, technology improvements. And I say, you know, I think it's been one of our successes because we have really, really good brand recognition throughout our community. And we know that from our non-rider surveys that we do every other year and through some of our citizen surveys that we do, or I should say resident surveys that we do. Right. And so so our community knows who we are and they know what we do. I would say to a point more so than they ever have in the past, you know. And so in terms of ridership, when we did, you know, ridership, you know, pre-COVID, when we rebranded and we enhanced our frequency and we, you know, kind of retooled some of our routes, you know, just improving that service offering, we really saw some gains in ridership. In fact, I don't have the exact, you know, numbers at the top of my mind, but, you know, when we kind of rebranded and relaunched our service, there was a 3-year period there where we saw about a 12% cumulative increase in ridership. It, you know, subsequently stabilized. And then, of course, we've seen some drop off like every agency has, you know, this year. But and then that's really on the bus side. And then we can't, you know, forget to mention the fact that during that time period, we also brought a modern streetcar online for Oklahoma City. And we did that in December of 2018. And we're really pleased with the ridership there as well. And maybe this would be a good time for me to turn over to Jesse to talk a little bit about ridership on the Oklahoma City streetcar, especially thinking, you know, just the first year of this new transit mode for Oklahoma City, keeping in mind Oklahoma City has no rail-based, you know, public transportation,
right?
Until now, the streetcar. So it's totally new for our community.
Yeah. Jesse, can you give a little bit of background on that, on the streetcar system? You know, what the, you know, what the goals were and how that's, you know, performing at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the streetcar system was really part of our overall vision, going back to that plan that Jason was talking about. Again, bringing that extra mode of service to Oklahoma City. And so like Jason mentioned, you know, we launched service in 2018, December 14th of 2018. That first 2 weeks, we saw nearly 70,000 riders come out and use our system. And also, you know, during Christmas time and New Year's Eve and stuff. So we saw great ridership then. We continue to see great ridership all the way through 2019. We carried over nearly 600,000 people in 2019. And that was really with, you know, minimal added businesses along the route, right? So we're actually having a ribbon cutting for one of our brand new convention center downtown today. And we're super excited to see what that does with our ridership. So all throughout all of 2019, our marketing team and our outreach team, we initiated a bunch of programs to help get businesses and property owners along the route involved in our system and what we're doing. Kind of like what Jason said, you know, Oklahoma City is a big, it's very car centric. And so just kind of changing that mentality with people within Oklahoma City, we made a great effort to do that. And so And we had a team during construction that would go out and meet with property owners, and our construction teams would go in and visit with the property owners. We would visit restaurants and things like that, just getting the word out there prior to our launch. And then again, like I said, during 2019, we were in constant contact with these business owners. We implemented a program that's called Love the Loops. And so it allowed us to kind of highlight businesses that were along the route that, help drive ridership for our streetcar system, but also help drive business impacts for those property owners and business owners along the route. Again, with COVID, we've seen a bit of a decrease with our streetcar ridership, but we've never stopped service. We see public transit as a need for everyone in Oklahoma City, and so we continue service, and we pride ourselves in that. There was a period of time where activity downtown was very, very minimal. With any public transit, the more that people are on the street, the more ridership you're going to have. And there just wasn't that many people in the street, but you still saw the streetcar out there running the loops. So the citizens of Oklahoma City knew that they could depend on public transit, even during a worldwide pandemic. So we're very, very proud of that, and very proud of the service that we brought to Oklahoma City. And we're coming up on 3 years here pretty quick.
Yeah. And Jason and Jesse, if you guys could talk a little bit about kind of the planning process for Embark and in the city, Oklahoma City. A little bit about if COVID-19 is impacting that planning process right now. Maybe the plans you already had that are in motion, and kind of the plans looking forward, in the short term future.
Right. Well, yeah, no, that's, I appreciate the question. So one of the things that, we look at here, and we've talked about as an executive team is, really trying to continue to focus on the future. I mean, we know what the last year or so has held for everyone, but looking to the future, in our minds, there's no reason to change our expectations in terms of where public transit and where ridership is going. Like back to the streetcar, for example, February of 2020, in terms of ridership, exceeded February of 2019. So why am I saying that? It's because even going into, the second year of the streetcar, we were seeing enhanced ridership. Some of the, as we know, coldest times of the year where ridership is, typically down. So we were seeing that momentum continue, and our fixed route bus ridership was, staying, consistent. So we're focusing on the future. And so what does that mean? That means even now, we are continuing to work our fixed guideway plan that was established back in 2005. Mm-hmm. That plan indicated, we needed a more robust fixed route bus network, identified several BRT corridors, identified some commuter rail corridors. And so what have we done? Well, we're currently under a contract with a consultant to help us with a comprehensive operational analysis, which currently we are now looking at our existing fixed route bus system and trying to update it for, just things that have changed within our city, major employers and that kind of, as any progressive transit agency would do, right? You want to look at those things every few years. Embark has also been named as the basically the administrative arm, if you will, of a six-city group trust, I should say, the Regional Transit Authority of Central Oklahoma. So we're providing the administrative services to that agency, which is currently under contract, and we're working very closely with consultants to study commuter rail options. The corridors are identified. The Northwest Bus Rapid Transit that we might talk about a little bit later is currently under design. Will be in construction, within a year, and then open in 2023. And then two other things I'd like to mention, and I know, is we also, during this time period, took a hard look at ourselves on the inside, and we've developed a strategic plan, if you will. We refer to it here as our roadmap, and we've branded it as an employee-driven transformation plan, where we've identified, you know, three main initiatives, and we have some projects and strategies associated with those initiatives of really just looking at ourselves internally as an organization. And then finally, just like we've, you know, strategically approached our planning for transit service and making our organization better, we've also addressed our leadership structure. And, you know, Jesse's here with me today, just recently appointed as the assistant director of operations. We've also just added an assistant director of administration. So all that to say is we are planning and we are preparing for the future.
Right. Yeah. And that seems like there's a lot going on. So it seems like you're making inroads, I guess, on the battle against the automobile.
Alex, one other thing I may mention that I left out there is also in the midst of what I mentioned we're working on within our own organization. Our taxpayers just recently passed a temporary sales tax for capital projects throughout the city. And included in that package is $87 million for public transit improvements. So we're also actively working those projects.
Okay. And that will include kind of the basics, addressing bus shelters and kind of reorganizing and kind of facelifting the system itself.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it is the basics, but I would say we're looking to take the basics to, you know, the highest possible level. And what I mean by that is, like, yeah, there's a considerable amount of funding in that program for bus shelters, to the extent where, you know, of our 1,200 to 1,400 bus stops, you know, more than half of those will be ADA accessible covered shelters. We've made commitments and included in those estimates pricing to include security light at every single bus stop we have, you know, whether there's a shelter or not. It also contemplates adding traffic signal priority to about half of the signalized intersections within our bus network. So they are the basics of transit, but it's, in my mind, to an elevated level where it should really, like you say, really make a difference and I think give us an incredible facelift or transformation.
Right. Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I know a lot of agencies have to work on shelters and increasing the safety just there. You know, and you alluded to kind of like the old, you know, kind of reconfiguring your system to meet the new needs of the city. Also with that, you know, the shelters become outdated, you know, they're in areas that have now aren't as busy as they once were. So it's, you know, it's a sensical step, but it's a necessary step, and improving that safety, I'm sure, will help increase ridership and increase the feeling of safety for your passengers.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we know, for example, when, again, going back to our surveys that we do, the accessibility to a covered shelter is a big determining factor for residents that are thinking about using public transit. You know, obviously they want to know how close the stop is to their work or their home, but then next is our covered shelter for me to wait for the bus at?
Right. Especially given the some of the weather you guys had recently over there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned, you know, in addition to the commuter line, the BRT system, and I wanted to get a little bit into that. You know, can you talk a little bit about the BRT system, you know, what kind of, you know, what kind of route it may run across, how it's being funded and kind of the specifics of that system.
Yeah. And, you know, Jesse is our project lead or project manager for our bus rapid transit. So if I could, I'd turn it over to him to kick us off on this one, and then I'll add anything that we might need to add.
Of course. So So our project is right now it's branded as the Northwest BRT. We're currently going through the branding process to bring it up to date, but we'll talk about it as Northwest BRT for now. So our Northwest BRT project is essentially an 8-mile one-way, 16-mile round trip corridor, 32 stops within that corridor. It will serve downtown, so it'll circulate through our downtown core, but then it also will hit a lot of our major residential areas and our major job areas, right? And so what's interesting about our corridor is it travels down Klassen Boulevard and on Northwest Expressway. And so kind of like what I mentioned, it really goes right through some of our heaviest dense areas when it comes to residents and employment centers. So we're super excited about that. It really kind of expands our network, right? So we're looking at 12 to 15 minute headways. And we're really hoping that people will see it as an opportunity to start their journey on using public transit, right? So we saw that with our streetcar as a way to introduce public transit to people. Yeah. And we saw that as a positive, and we're seeing this. We're hoping for the same thing with our Northwest BRT. Some of the things that we're going to be implementing with this project is some technology additions. So each one of our 32 platforms will have an informational pylon that will let you know when the next three buses are going to arrive, but there'll also be an area on that informational pylon for advertisements, right? And kind of like what Jason was talking about with that 1 cent sales tax, with this BRT project, every single platform will have a shelter with security lighting, but then we'll also be adding some additional lighting to kind of light the way for pedestrians to get to those stops. And again, where our project is running, there's limited sidewalks. So being able to make those connections for pedestrians, we'll be adding sidewalks from our BRT stops to intersections to be able to make those connections. Every one of our BRT platforms will have at a minimum one bike rack. Again, thinking about that multi-modality for people that first and last mile, right? Being able to ride your bike to a platform and you can lock it up, or you can put it on the BRT bus and take it with you. Just really making it so that people can get around Oklahoma City as easy as possible, right? And then similar to like all the other BRTs, you know, with a focus on being rapid. So we're going to have ticket vending machines on the platforms to speed up the process of boarding. So, you know, you're not having to wait for people to purchase their ticket on the bus. They'll be purchasing their ticket on the platform. Essentially, the bus will pull up, doors open, get on board, 15, 20 second dwell time, and the bus is gone, right? So, again, focusing on that rapid, making it easy to use that in that 12 to 15 minute headways.
Right.
You know, we're always looking at the future when it comes to our equipment also. So we're looking at ways to improve our BRT buses. Our buses are going to be equipped for level boarding, right? So essentially the bus will pull up and it'll be at the same height as our platforms to allow for strollers and wheelchairs and things like that, those natures to be able to quickly board. Information inside the bus for our riders, you know, we're possibly looking at ways to add advertisement screens inside the buses and things like that. Just really trying to focus on our rider to, you know, make it as easy to use and enjoyable to use. Again, trying to change that whole mentality in Oklahoma City of what public transit is, right? And we really feel it, you know, if we can get you on the bus, then we've got you locked in as a customer because you know, the service that we are able to provide, we feel like once you're on the bus, you're locked in, you'll be excited to continue to use public transit.
If I can, Alex, I'll jump in there. Cause I think you'd ask about funding too, but you know, Jesse had mentioned, you know, lots of residential and employment density along the corridor. And I think, you know, one of the things I hope people take away from this is, you know, in transit, especially, you know, we do a lot of planning. We do a lot of planning. We always have planning in the works, right? One of the things we always try to show to our customers and to our policymakers is we have a track record of implementing, even if it's incrementally, but it's implementing these plans. And so this Northwest Corridor, BRT, it was like a recommended corridor in our 2005 fixed guideway study. We did a Northwest Corridor concept plan. We were able to leverage those efforts to obtain a build grant. And so that's really the, you know, the mechanism where we're able to construct this BRT is through the build grant. But it's because we can continually implement our plan, I think, that has got us to this point. And one of the things we stressed in that build grant application was, again, going back to employment density and residential density. You know, we're all familiar with heat maps. And if you were to lay a heat map on this corridor of both those factors, you would see that this bus corridor is in some, if not the most dense employment areas in Oklahoma City and residential as well. In fact, I believe there's about 20% of the employment in Oklahoma City is within, I think it's maybe a half a mile of the corridor, maybe it's a mile and a half a mile. But so again, I think we're really poised for success. Like Jesse said, we can get people on the BRT. We can certainly get them to those employment centers. Yeah. So I'm kind of talking a little bit around the funding and didn't mean to, but so what we're able to do is leverage that planning into a roughly $14 million build grant. And then we're matching the project with $14 million of local funds. And again, right, this is where that tie to the city of Oklahoma City, you know, essentially being a city department has really helped us, because the local funding that we're able to put into this project is coming from GO bonds and another temporary sales tax that the city has through, the voter approval process. So that's really the funding. It's a $28 million project with about 50% of that coming from a build grant.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm sure you guys have demonstrated, you know, the ability to complete projects, obviously, with that streetcar previously. So I'm sure that went a long way with FTA and getting these grants as well.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about the whole timing of the BRT, while you mentioned streetcar, is you can imagine the amount of work that went into preparing and launching the streetcar December 14th of 2018. And so we launched streetcar that day, and also found out that day we were getting the $14 million build grant. Kind of all happened on the same day. So we're like, well, guess we know what to work on next, right?
Yes. Soon as one door closes, another one opens, I guess.
Yeah. So it was great timing for us.
Yeah. Well, again, Jason and Jesse, thanks for joining me. I have just a couple more questions. And sure. I wanted to talk a little bit about, being here in California and seeing kind of the trend throughout transit. If Embark is looking into sustainable practices, I guess specifically electric buses, but also some of the things that you are doing, in the region to kind of increase sustainability.
Yeah, I can touch on some things we do that are certainly connected to sustainability. One, I think, is the fact that we manage a bike share program. We try to coordinate that with other public transit trips as closely as we can. And we've been doing that now we've been coordinating the city's bike share program now for probably about 5 years. We're continuing to grow that bike share program, transitioning from, the dock-based system that kind of came out when bike to now the dockless bikes that allow us a lot more flexibility. And quite frankly, our customer base, it's much more flexible for our customer base. Mm-hmm. So we're doing that. The other thing we've done is, and our board of directors, our board of trustees really took a position on transforming our fleet into alternative fuels. Like that's, you know, that's the plan. So as we replace buses, we've replaced all, I shouldn't say, every bus we've replaced has either been a CNG or we've just now added an electric bus to our fleet or, and are in the midst of procuring our second electric bus. So we have a commitment here to be a full, alternative fuels fleet, if you will, mainly CNG, but again, we are introducing electric buses as well. Right. So I think those are a couple of examples of, you know, our sustainability efforts.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, you know, what, you know, is the pressure similar in that region of the U.S. as it is here? I mean, and here, yeah, I guess on either coast, there's a lot of pressure to move into sustainable fuels, electric, that sort of thing. Do you guys feel that same pressure or do you feel it more as something you owe to the community that you serve?
Yeah, I think I think primarily it's more of just, you know, being a good corporate steward, if you will. I mean, you know, right. That's the way our board of trustees, I believe, has looked at it. I mean, it's a way for us to continue to do our part. I don't know that there's, you know, as much pressure here in Oklahoma City as you know, you would see in other metropolitan areas. Right. But nonetheless, I give credit to our board, you know, 100% by looking in, by actually recognizing this, you know, 4 to 5 years ago, and starting to push us as staff to, okay, what's our alternative fuel solution here? And so we said, all right, we'll build a CNG facility. We'll commit to CNG fueling, throughout. And of course, in the midst of that, electric buses have become more prevalent. And, you know, with their authorization, we've been able to apply and receive some grant funding for some electric buses too.
Right. Well, great. I guess, you know, maybe the last thing, and obviously it's, we're coming up, I believe is, I don't remember if today is the day, the anniversary of kind of a year being in the pandemic. Obviously a strange thing to celebrate, but also, I mean, just incredibly how fast everything went by. You know, I was kind of thinking, you know, moving ahead and mm-hmm. you know, kind of lessons learned from this pandemic and how it may impact planning in the future, both for the Oklahoma City region and just for the nation as a whole. You know, how do you think, you know, the lessons learned will kind of impact how we move forward in terms of transportation and kind of overall mobility?
Yeah. Let me see if I can answer that from the standpoint of, I think I've alluded to the fact that it really hasn't slowed us down in terms of what, you know, we're currently planning in terms of future transit enhancements and continuing to improve transit, like within our community. Perfect. So what I'd like to do, if I could, is try to direct that more towards like, how's that impacted service delivery now and those future plans we have? And, you know, there's not very many positive takeaways, of course, overall, but I mean, in terms of delivering service, man, the last year in my mind has really set us on a trajectory where, at least for our organization, we have a completely new set of standards that we abide by in right. service delivery. And we can take it by the way, you know, we clean our buses now and the safeguards we put in place for our employees and customers, whether it be the air filtration systems on the buses, simple things like hand sanitizer, supplying masks, you know, all those safety aspects, I don't see a reason why we would stop that. Right. So it's kind of like an elevated expectation, I think, for us on all of our service modes. But then talking about service delivery, here's what we've learned, adapted to, and I think become very good at operationally. It has changed our dynamic operationally in terms of how we communicate, how fast we as an operations team are able to react. Right. We've certainly demonstrated our ability to be nimble. I think we've really been able to leverage this as a way to establish or reinforce the confidence of our employees and, you know, management's ability to lead the organization and look out for the well-being of the employees. And I say that because we put a tremendous amount of safeguards in place early on. I mean, for example, you know, mask mandates, we've had those in place with our, in our agency since last July, you know. Immediately, I believe it was in April, May timeframe, you know, we immediately went to alternating shifts, allowing half of our workers to stay at home while the other half provided a reduced level of service. And as an operations and a management team, you know, we were talking every day. I mean, literally, you know, there for a while, and we've kept that practice up. You know, we have conversations every day about things we need to address operationally. So obviously you get into more details, but you know, the gist of that in my mind is we're continuing to work on our long-term plans, but we are better as an organization operationally by facing the challenges and overcoming, or at least managing them throughout this last year. It's right. Really drawn us, I think, tight as a management team as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting that you mentioned, you know, being nimbler. I mean, that's something that, you know, fairly or unfairly has been kind of a knock on transit, is its inability to be nimble. And you mentioned, you know, that being one of the positives coming out of this whole thing. Great. Jason and Jesse, I really appreciate your time. Thanks again for everything. Thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us, and come see us sometime. We'd love to host you.
I'd love to
show you around.
Catch a basketball game for sure.
Absolutely. All right. Take care. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Metrospectives, a podcast by Metro Magazine. Be sure to check out all the latest industry news at metromagazine.com. Follow us on social media with links down in the show description.